The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hi, this is Danny Roth, and this is Everyday Horror. It's a podcast where we watch at least one horror movie for every day in the month of October, and then we talk about it. I'm joined today by the associate features editor at Sci-Fi Wire, Caitlin Bush.
Hello, Danny.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
I'm living my life. I'm all right. Everything's normal. Everything's great. What movie did you pick?
I picked The Exorcist.
Oh, so like the original Exorcist.
Yeah.
The one that people usually only think about the third act.
Mm-hmm.
And not the first two acts, which are like the reason why the third act works.
Exactly.
Not that this is like a real classic, like, this is like some fake geek girling to the whole audience. I don't know why I decided to come out the gate so hostile.
He went like full film critic there for a hot second.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, everybody. I really like The Exorcist. All right, so The Exorcist is probably the possession movie. Like when people were like, hey, what's a movie about possession? It's probably the first one that people think of. When people say like, hey, what's a good horror movie? It's usually in the top 5 to 10.
It's definitely my top 5.
Of movies that people will name. What else? Like, best 70s movies probably on that list too. It's a real top tier. Like, you didn't mess around. Like, some of the movies that we do on this list, they vary in quality. Some of them are really well known. Some of them are a little unknown. Some of them are pretty good. Some of them are hot garbage. But this is like the top shelf. This is like the, I have to get on my tippy toes to reach the gin that's all the way up there that somebody for some reason wants me to pour, and it's like $100 a glass. You know, or I guess not gin. That's like a clear thing. It'd be like a brown liquid of some kind.
It would be a scotch.
Yeah. This kind of
burns on the way down.
This is the finest of scotches.
Yeah.
So why did you pick The Exorcist?
Why did I pick The Exorcist? I picked The Exorcist because A, it is one of my favorite horror movies of all time. And I realized this weekend when I was thinking about what movie we were going to talk about that I hadn't seen it in a while. Which is really strange because I tend to rewatch movies pretty frequently, especially if I do love them. And we were, and by I say we, I mean me and my roommates were at a party this weekend and talking about horror movies as we are wont to do. And someone mentioned The Exorcist, and I just kind of had this moment of, wow, I haven't watched The Exorcist in probably about 6 years or something.
So did you watch it last night?
I did. Okay. I watched it last night.
So did you get more out of it this time? Did you get like more, as sometimes happens when you rewatch a movie and that you haven't seen in a while?
Yeah, I got more out of the first two acts than I have before, I think. And I think most of the time I do watch this movie not sober.
Oh, okay.
It's one of those movies that...
So because you did it for work.
I did it for work, and so I watched it sober, which was...
Very kind of you.
Phenomenal. Yeah, I guess I was paying more attention, you know, trying to suss it out a little bit more than I usually do, which is what means that you just are with people when you're watching it usually, and you don't pay attention for the first hour and a half of the movie.
Yeah, that's fair.
So,
yeah, So I guess just very quickly, if someone's never seen The Exorcist before, what is the plot of The Exorcist?
if for some reason you are listening to this podcast about horror movies and you have never seen The Exorcist, first of all, shame on you. And second of all, the movie is essentially a little girl gets possessed by a demon and they have to call an exorcist. And the exorcists have their own personal issues that come up. And one of the exorcists, who is a Jesuit priest, has to deal with his own personal issues of feeling like he had failed his mother, that he was questioning his faith maybe a little bit. And he is also a psychiatrist on top of everything else. So he's trying to make sense of reason and logic and also belief, which is always an interesting conversation. Then the little girl goes through an exorcism. And
yeah,
that's what it is. And there's pea soup, and it's vomit, and it's gross and great. and her head turns around like an owl. And that's the entire plot of the movie.
You got it.
Yep.
Yeah, that is it. All right, so The Exorcist is a movie that I watch in tandem with a bunch of other films, but it
What's your lineup usually for it?
I will usually watch it with oddly, like, I'll watch it with movies that often have evil kids, so I'll watch like The Omen and I'll watch like Rosemary's Baby, cuz like it has different elements.
Right. But it all has that creepy child.
There is a creepy child element. I think that, like, if you look at Rosemary versus Chris McNeil, because, you know, like, one of them is pregnant and doesn't know what the score is with the kid, whereas that being Rosemary, obviously, but then Chris McNeil, like, she's got this kid. The kid's been totally normal.
It's and a then, great kid.
Great kid. Reagan's a good, other than her horrible, unfortunate 80s name, she's a great, yeah, I mean, like, who knew? Who knew that she was going to end up like, I mean, I guess like that really explains it. It's the Reagan connection that she, anyway. So who is Jordan running this podcast? You could say. Anyway. So I think the best horror movies do this thing where like everything for the most part starts out normal and then you slowly peel the sanity away like an onion until like there's nothing left.
Yeah. You slip into kind of this very strange universe where nothing really makes sense anymore.
Yeah.
And it freaks you out because they set it up like, oh, this could happen to you.
Yeah. And what I like about it is that it starts you off weird, right? Because, and I feel like this is the thing, like if you just sort of in the background are aware of The Exorcist, not only are you mostly thinking about that third act, but you definitely don't think about the fact that it starts in like Iran,
I think.
Is it Iran? All
I
right.
think so.
Like, so like it starts with Max von Sydow playing Father Marin. Like, that's the place that we start. Like, we start away from America. We start away from like what I think most people would deem the familiar. And
if you don't know what's going on, you're really confused when this movie first opens because it goes from one to the other without explanation.
It's a completely different film for like the first like 15, 20.
Yeah.
Like, or my like, 10, like 10 to 15. Yeah, 10 to 15. Yeah. So like, yeah, like the whole beginning is, yeah, like Father Marin is someplace else. He's at like archaeological sites and he sees a really scary looking statue at one point. And he's taking
some
pills.
Kind of looks like a demon.
Yeah, so I mean, like, it's a 70s movie, so, you know that it's suggesting something. You're like, are these his personal demons? He's taking some pills. Like, you're certainly aware that he's older. Like, is this a man who is examining things at the end of his life and he's scared? Is it just death that he's afraid of? Is it bad choices that he made? But, like, there's all of this because there's not a lot of talking. It's mostly visuals.
It's mostly visuals of him sitting around and shaking and trying to open this tiny little pill thing with these really sketchy looking pills inside of it. And everyone kind of staring at him. And he's like one of the only white dudes sitting around in this little village. And he's just trembling before all of these people. And it's disturbing.
It is. It's really weird. And again, it's not the thing that I think most people associate with The Exorcist. So, like, he's the first piece of the puzzle, and that's where you start. And then, we do the Father Karras stuff. And Father Karras is
a piece of work.
Father Karras is, to me, I mean, that's like my stand. Like it's Chris McNeil and Father Karras. They're like the two bookends of the film. Like, they're the two things that I enjoy most. The two characters, the two storylines that I think that are the most interesting. Because Father Karras is, yeah, I mean, like, he is a Jesuit. He's supposed to be very faithful, but I think in this very fascinating way, because he was sent to school to be a psychologist or psychiatrist.
After he had already gone and
because he starts, yeah, like that's the thing. Like, he started as a Jesuit. There is a point in which Chris McNeil is like, "How does this happen? How does like as a therapist become a priest?" And he's like, it's the other way around.
Yeah,
and
a priest became a therapist.
And I think that what's fascinating is that, like, yeah, like this would, like, of course, naturally sort of turn you away from God. The more that you embrace science, the more that you would question and have doubts about where God fits into the realm of science. Even something that is somewhat of a meta science, like understanding in the mind and like helping people talk their way through their problems. Like, even that is a kind of replacement for going to church, right? Like, that's a lot of people's church. Certainly if you're in New York.
It's how you find understanding of like the world around you.
Like you could go to temple, you could go to mass, or you could just go to therapy once a week.
And pay for it.
Yeah, that's how I do it. Perfectly normal, perfectly acceptable way to do it if you got the cash. But it's like church just for you. But yeah, I mean, I think he's really interesting in that way. And then, yes, his story arc for those first two acts is not about exorcism at all. It's just he's got a mother. He's trying to figure out what to do with her. She's at the end of her life. And
it's about the overlap of faith and science.
Yeah, like he doesn't know what to do. Like she wants to be able to stay in her house. Like that's, oh, that's, this is my place. I don't want to go someplace else. And, you know, and she's like, nope. He's like, well, I don't know what to do about this. And then like all of a sudden, like she's got a bad spell because he doesn't really act. And then all of a sudden, like 6 days after that, she's dead. A thing that we don't even really like, we don't really get the full skinny on. You find out after the fact.
It through context clues.
Yeah. And like they say like, yeah, they say that she's dead. Yeah. And you're like, oh shit. Okay. Like she's out. You just know that she's in a bad way. And he, again, like it's interesting that like, the problems that he faces as a character are often as a result of his doubt and thereby inaction. He doesn't make a choice about his mom. Like he could have forced her into a home, at which point she would have been miserable, but probably safe. But instead, he leaves her alone. She winds up having to be hospitalized anyway. Again, he goes with his mother's brother, his uncle, I guess. And again, like it's just like he's freaked out, doesn't really know what to do. Now she's dead. And now he's really doubting his faith, so he's completely frozen. Which makes, I mean, like, this is the thing. You don't need to be a priest to understand these feelings. And I think one of the things, like you said, that, you know, like you were sober mm-hmm. when you watched it. But but the other thing is that I think there are certain movies, and this is one of them, where the older you get, the more you understand it. Because
absolutely.
The more you can appeal to, sympathize with, and empathize with the anxieties of these people. So for me, like, I totally, you know, like, I look at my parents and I'm like, that day is coming. Like, this stuff that he's dealing with is close. And that's scary, especially because at least my dad's probably listening to this podcast. And you're like, I'm fine. I'm like, are you, Dad?
Are you?
No, he's fine. But, like, you know, I mean, like, that's the thing. He and I both know, like, that, you know, I mean, like, that could turn at any point. Like, that's it. You just get past a certain age, you know? Like you get close to the 70 area and all of a sudden, like all bets are off. And I'm watching Father Karras. I also rewatched it. I rewatched it this morning. Like, boy, I'm not saying like he's not a perfect person by any measure, but I get him.
He's not a bad person either, too. And that's something that happens so often is that you're cool with what happens to people in quote unquote horror movies because they're not the best people always. But he's just kind of He's made bad decisions, and bad decisions happen because he is frozen by indecision and by his struggle between science and faith and all of that. But he's not a bad person, and you want things to work out for him. And yet, here you are, and that helps you sympathize with him that much more.
Do you want to talk about Chris McNeil and Reagan?
Chris McNeil is absolutely fantastic. She is my favorite part of this movie. Without a doubt.
Ellen Burstyn is fantastic. And just as a quick sidebar, I mean, I don't know the reason. Maybe she said no. But, like, it blows my mind that they made an Exorcist TV show, had Geena Davis play an adult version, spoilers for this show that I think is pretty much long done by now, but plays an adult Reagan. And they bring in a different actress.
To play her mom.
To play Chris McNeil. And I was like, Ellen Burstyn's still alive?
Mm-hmm.
Could have been her?
She probably just said no.
I guess. Good grief, though. She is, I think it's fair to say she's probably the best thing about the whole movie.
Oh, she's phenomenal. She's absolutely fantastic. I was struck watching it again when she first meets Father Merrick, when he approaches her in the park, when she's standing on the bridge.
Oh, Father Karras.
Father Karras, yes. When Father Karras approaches her in the park and she has, you know, the sunglasses on and the scarf over her head and she's kind of gone through her first really big physical bout of violence with the possessed Reagan, and the the pain and fear that she is exuding during that is heart-wrenching.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is, I think, a thing that a lot of, I mean, I'm not breaking new ground here, but, you know, you can be a parent and have a kid who's totally normal, and then anything could be mental illness, could be a physical illness, it could be like they've made a horrible accident, made a bad friend at school, there's a bully at school, like there's a million things, like, yeah, like kids getting abused and you don't know about it in some fashion, like, and all of a sudden the kid becomes completely other, becomes completely unfamiliar, and then you don't know what to do at all, you know, is a very, again, like a really familiar thing and really, like, really scary in a way that very few movies are. Like, this is the thing. I watch The Exorcist and I'm like, I'm not, you know, like, I'm not jumping. I'm not, like, giggling because I got scared or freaked out by something. It just makes you feel, like, deeply unsettled. Because nothing about it, you know, I mean, like, again, like, this is, you know, they put out Hereditary this year and, like,
that's what everyone was comparing.
Hereditary really, yeah. like, I can see the influence for sure. But, I mean, like, nobody does it better than The Exorcist for sure. And there's a thing I was thinking about in this rewatch, which is that the world around them is like there is so much stacked up that anything could, you really don't know what's happened to Reagan, but like there are things happening. I think one of the things that really jumps at me, and I can't believe I didn't think about it more until now, but they're having a party at Chris McNeil's house. Reagan's upstairs asleep, and the guy who's directing the movie that they're in gets really like soused and starts calling like these other guys Nazis. And they, you know, they probably like are to a degree, like maybe not literally, but like in 2018, like, you know, like we acknowledge and understand that, like, if you are appealing to and sympathizing in some way with white supremacists, you basically are one.
It's the catch-all.
Yeah. And so like he's really I think it is because like it's 2018 and we're really like the last couple years have been like this.
It's been on our brains a little bit lately.
For sure. And I just found myself like, I think in other viewings of it, because it has been a couple of years, I didn't think, like, I was like, yeah, I mean, that's probably accurate. I mean, like, there's a good chance. I mean, like, maybe the guy's, like, he could be Jewish. I don't know. Like, I don't, like, so, like, he, you know, I mean, like, it's the 1970s. The Holocaust's not that far in the rear view. It still isn't, by the way. But, like, you know, I think especially to probably know a lot of survivors and to feel that way, like the fact that that's there and the fact that if you look at Chris McNeil and you look at Reagan and you look at the world that they occupy, you're expected to not see it, right? Like it becomes so easily invisible, but it's still there. And the reason we know it's there is because of this like drunken interaction, right? And we know it's there because Father Maron is dealing with something like, and it's kind of existential, but he's in a different part of the world. And like, oh, right. There's a rest of the world that's not like this cutesy, rich, white family, like that is just like still performing life as it is for most people on planet Earth. And Father Karras, again, same thing. We're like, he's frozen in by inaction because he's dealing, you know, it's like, there's literally a point in the movie and it's like a really weird cut, but I think it works very well where, there's like a tickle fight, like Reagan like steals a cookie or something and like Chris is like, oh, I got you. And then like all of a sudden you're in the subway, you know, and
it's like the really loud screaming in your face kind of subway where it's coming up at you really fast.
And he's really stressed in general. And then here is this old homeless guy being like, hey, can you spare change for an old altar boy father?
Mm-hmm. And then you hear that voice later.
And then they bring it back later. But he is like, there is a dread to that, right? Because he's already doubting. And not only is it that he's doubting it, but also, I mean, like, you know, he's a Jesuit. He does not have a lot of money. He's not flush with cash. So everybody's struggling. You know, that's a part of the reason why stuff happens with his mother in the first place. Because, you know, they're not loaded. Because of course they're not. But again, like the Father Karras is much more representative of the average person. Like Chris McNeil is an actress. Like they, I think, very specifically chose somebody that is like what we would now call the 1%. and created a film that is basically like, oh, are you all the way at the top of the totem pole? Do you think that you are immune? You're not.
We're going to bring you down in the worst way by attacking your child.
And that's the thing is, like, I don't, like, Chris McNeil is privileged. Like, this is the thing. Like, I don't know how much people were talking about privilege in the 1970s. I mean, to a degree, maybe not using this language, but, like, she is. Her and Reagan are, like, you know, like, they have struggles. Like, obviously, Chris is divorced. The father's not really involved. Like, there's one phone conversation about there being something wrong, but she doesn't even tell her former husband the truth about how bad it is with Reagan at that point. Like, she's just like, it's fine. Don't worry about it. You don't need to come up. But, like, otherwise, yeah. Like, they talk about, like, getting Reagan a pony. Like, it's nothing. Like, sure, you can have a pony.
This child's dreams. Every child's dream scenario.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, yeah, like, not right now, but not because we can't afford it, but because, like, we're in a city setting. Like, maybe when we're, like
at our country home.
Yeah, like, then for sure, like, legit, you can have one. But, yeah, like, there's definitely this huge element of privilege, and it really does come shattering down. And so there's that. And then, yeah, I just... Like, what a great conceit. Like, Father Karras, frozen and stricken with fear and panic because he doesn't have anything to believe in when he's a priest, which is, like, the whole fundamental, like, root of you is that you have faith in a thing that's not there. And then something shows up and is like, the good news is this shit's real. The bad news is this shit's real.
Well, I wanted to... chat a bit more about one of my favorite subjects in horror movies, which is to always talk about religion.
Okay.
Because I think religion is... I myself am not a religious person.
Sure.
But I went to a Catholic high school because it was a better education. And
or perceived that way.
Perceived that way. I had a great education. I was very fortunate in that. But I know quite a bit about religion because of that, even though I don't actually practice it. So I have a very academic kind of love for it and thinking about it and talking about it and reporting on it. And that's what I always do whenever I come across a film where there's something to be talked about with exorcism, with hauntings. And so I have talked to Catholic priests who are exorcists and all of that. And all of them tell me that The Exorcist is the most accurate exorcism movie that any of them have ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
That it's this is how exorcism works, and I think it's really interesting because the best kind of horror, in my opinion, is the horror that takes something that we naturally think is being very pure, whether that be religion, children, dolls, clowns, stuff that is supposed to be happy or safe. Have some sort of good thing to do in the world. It's safe, and then you take that, you bastardize it, and you turn it into something that is meant to scare you or is meant to make you feel kind of dirty.
Yeah, they use a really great, the way they use faith in general in this movie is really good, but there's one particular moment that I always think about, which is that, you know, Father Karras is like, he goes, they're like, this kid's possessed, he's uncertain, and then he is at the altar. And he is doing that Eucharist dance. And I think, they never say it, but I always sort of assume, because that's the turning point, where he goes from not being on board to being on board. And I'm like, so this is because he's sitting there going like, I'm willing to accept transubstantiation, which is insane, a ridiculous conceit that no other version of Christianity believes, that it's literally the body and blood of Christ. But I can't accept that this little girl... absolutely, regardless of what the reason is, needs my help, and there's something that I could potentially do. Like, I'm willing to do this thing. I don't even believe in this, but I will, like, do this ritual and give the Eucharist to these people, but I won't do this. And, like, it's never said, but it always felt really clear to me.
Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting. As I was rewatching last night, what I had talked about with someone recently was actually the process of getting an exorcism approved through the church. And it's actually like, they obviously, it's a lot better than it was like in the 16th century or something like that, when it was literally like, oh, this person has a headache. There's probably a demon in their skull. Let's crack it open with a rock or something like that.
Totally normal.
But the accuracy of him being a psychiatrist, of him being a doctor of, you know, human behavior and all of that is very accurate. You know, the whole thing, if you go to a priest and say, hey, my kid is acting up. There's all this weird stuff that's happening. They think all of this is happening to them. They need an exorcism. Apparently, your Catholic priest will be like, okay, well, here's the thing. We acknowledge that mental illness exists in the world, so we're going to ask you to go to a couple of psychiatrists. We're going to ask you to be tested, to go through all of this stuff, to go through normal human medical procedures, and then you can come back to us if none of that proves to be true, and then we'll try and get it approved by the Vatican or the church or whatever authorities, by our local cardinal, by whatever.
I'm a little surprised they're not more inviting of the option now, to be honest, just because, like, most people can't afford doctors like that at all. Like, that's, again, it's the same thing, you know, like, Chris McNeil can afford to do every medical test
while
under
the
sun.
Sitting around with a room full of like 25 doctors who are all telling her all of this crap.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, like most people don't have the scratch to go to like a Mayo Clinic and have multiple doctors from different like backgrounds, you know, different professions, and be like, yeah, like I'm a doctor of this and I'm a doctor of this, and we're all going to work together to crack this case. Like, yeah, that's a thing that, like, in the 1970s, I don't think a lot of people really had access to, and, like tons of people in America don't have access to it now. That's for goddamn sure. And, yeah, like, I could see the appeal of being like, well, maybe this will work. Like, this is the complexity of religion. I was actually thinking about this. Was I, like, in the train? I was thinking about it today. Like, I literally was thinking about... like, I know why religion exists. It makes a lot of sense, right? Like, we as a culture need a thing to believe in that is so much bigger than us that it cannot be questioned. And that if we all kind of generally believe in the same thing, then we won't
feel alone.
Right. And not only will we not feel alone, but we'll also obey certain basic tenets, basic rules. And if we all kind of feel like we're part of that same community, we won't be too shitty to each other. So it's, you know, potentially very beneficial.
Absolutely.
But as with all things, the unfortunate reality is that, like, we have nothing with which to put down and say, like, yep, this is the God that's real. This thing is legit. So all that remains is human beings to sort of decide what the rules are, and human beings are pretty flawed. Anyway, like, I'm not saying anything new, but, like, I don't know, watching this movie, I was struck by the potential strength and goodness of faith, but also, yeah, like, I'm living in 2018, and I am surrounded by the ills of it, which is, like, it's a weird, it messes with the mind, because, like, I watched it, and I was like, yeah, I mean, like, faith. It can be very good. Religion, having a place to go like one day a week for worship, just to have that community. You know, like, I have friends that, like, you know, they keep kosher and they, like, you know, like, once the sun goes down, like, that's it. You know, they're not leaving the house for a certain amount of time. Like, and, you know, most of my friends that do that aren't, it's not that they're super religious. Most of them are pretty pro-science. They do it because it's a structure in their lives. It's a community in their lives. Like, that makes sense to me. And that's sort of like the weird, almost hopeful element. Cause, like, that's the thing. Like, the movie ends and it's dark, but also, like, divorced of the idea that there are other movies, which, like, I would say there don't need to be any others.
They don't exist. It's fine.
I mean, I will say we might talk about the third one in another episode, but, and that one is interesting, but it's sort of exists in it's, like, Father Karras is kind of a character, but it's not really about Reagan. It's kind of about a different thing for a while. But, yeah, she is okay. It works. Like, this man has his faith restored in a horrific way, but he uses it. It spurns him to action, and he saves this little girl's life. There's something kind of powerful and fundamentally good about that.
And she's maybe a little haunted for it. Because
sure.
There's this line where they say, oh, she doesn't remember anything. But then...
But that's not true.
But you can tell. I mean, she, A, has the literal scars of it on her face still and the bruising and everything. But then also, you know, she... Father Karras' friend who comes up to her at the end, she kind of just gives him a hug and kisses his cheek and kind of silently.
Yeah, she looks at the collar and like, yeah, I mean, I'm sure she remembers something.
Like, she's like, this helped me.
She has a fundamental understanding and like, yeah, that's really, I don't know, man. It's a bummer about Catholicism being so evil some of the time. Like, that's a real drag. Like, because there is a profound goodness. Like, you get to the end of the movie and you're like, look at all the good that a church could do. Look at all the possibilities. Father Karras is a marriage of science and faith. He is ultimately both those things. Like, and the reality is, and the movie is largely about this, that if you embrace just one, it won't work. Fundamentally, they use nothing but science for like the whole first two acts.
And it's actually a doctor
that says, hey, try an exorcism.
We can't help you anymore. And it's interesting to me. I literally took a note down about it on my phone while I was watching it, because suggesting it in the first place means that you're very aware of this. But also he says something along the lines of, well, you know, it's probably nothing, but if she believes that it's an exorcism, just doing an exorcism will make her feel better.
Yeah,
and
they say like, yeah, it sometimes works, not for the reason that they think it works,
right,
but it can work.
But the accuracy of that is not accurate, because that's not how that works. Like, within the church, if they don't do it just because, oh, maybe it'll help. There has to be a true belief that this is an exorcism, because their whole idea is that they're going to help people, and acknowledging a lie or even a personal issue in that way could actually hurt someone more than it could help them. So if Regan hadn't been actually possessed and had gone to the priest, Chris had gone to the priest and say, hey, can you just do this to make my daughter feel better? They say, no, sorry, can't help you. Go see a psychiatrist.
Yeah.
It's a good movie.
It sure is good. I don't, like, if you were listening to this and were like, is it really as good as all that? I mean, I don't know. Maybe your mileage may vary, but...
It's also, like, you have to go in knowing that the first two acts of this movie are not, you
know... not the thing that, like, you've been told about or the stuff that you've seen clips from.
Exactly.
Like,
it's not
that
her
movie.
Head spinning around the entire time.
Yeah, no, there's none of that. The whole first act has nothing to do with that at all, and the second act is, like, where you, like...
Things kind of start to go uneasy.
Yeah, like, but they do get to, like, you know, like, I mean, like, basically it's like she pees herself. And, like, oh, let me just say this, very important. Don't look at any extended cuts. Just watch the theatrical cut. You don't, there's like a spider walk thing that it's terrible.
It is bad.
It is not, it in no way adds to the narrative. And I would say that almost never do you need an extended cut of a movie. Like,
especially a horror movie.
Yeah. I did an episode with Courtney of Drag Me to Hell, and like the extended cut is basically just like a lot more gore.
Oh, yeah. And it's always just like unnecessary. Yeah.
Like the film is perfect in my mind as is. So yeah, I mean, like, don't watch if you're like, oh, I can watch one of these two, just watch the theatrical cut. It is really what you need. It is pretty well perfectly executed. It's a very good adaptation of the original text of the book. Let's say if somebody really liked The Exorcist, what's another movie that someone could watch?
I mean, like we've said, there's kind of nothing that's comparable. I mean, there's things that have been obviously inspired by The Exorcist, but it's kind of like the end-all, be-all of exorcism movies. Like, we could talk about other movies that have exorcism in them.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I just looked up possession movies, and a lot of them are ones that
It's like The Conjuring.
It is, but like they're movies that I actually have already recorded episodes of or will be recording episodes of. So I was like, oh, wow, like, I guess not. Like, I was going to say, like...
You're just going, we're just really going for those exorcism movies.
Well, I mean, like, Prince of Darkness is on there. That's okay.
That's good.
That one's all right. If you want something like fun 80s, I mean, Night of the Demons technically has possession of it, but that's like classic, like 80s, like blood and titty kind of horror. Yeah, I mean, that's a very different kind of movie.
You could do like The Exorcism of Emily Rose.
Oh, yeah. I kind of like that one,
always,
actually.
Yeah. I considered suggesting that one for this, but.
Yeah, I like that one. I actually do like that one. Yeah, I would not. I mean, like, I don't think you need to watch Exorcist II, The Heretic. I would skip that entirely.
Exorcist III,
I may end up doing an episode about it. If I don't.
You should.
Then know that you should. It's worth seeing. If I do it, then I guess I'll end up repeating myself. But
Poltergeist is always good.
Poltergeist,
I mean,
it's
not possession. I really like Poltergeist.
It's in my top five favorite horror movies. Period. Yeah.
It's rated PG, which is my favorite thing about it.
Oh well, I mean, it's also that's like one of the movies that made it so that PG-13 as a thing existed. Like there would be no PG-13 necessarily without Poltergeist. I mean, I guess eventually something else would have done it, but it definitely was one of the things. Anyway, thanks, bud.
Yeah.
Where can people find you on the internet?
People can find me at Caitlin, Caitlin M. Bush, BUSCH, like the beer, not like the president, on Twitter.
Cool. I'm Danny Roth. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Danny Ordinary. That is Danny with one N, Ordinary, also with one N. Thank you for listening. And remember, sometimes the best cure for the horrors of every day is a little everyday horror. We'll see you next time.